Hello, this is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live. And just to bring you a little up to date, I'm sure that all regular listeners are aware that I feel that any life's experience has within it the seeds of a love letter to someone on any topic at any time. And you might as well write down anything positive you feel about somebody, put it in an envelope, stamp it, and mail it, and make somebody else's life richer, and you will really be amazed at the magic that follows. Today's guest is David Friedman, who I am happy to say is back. This is your third visit, isn't it?
It is my third visit,
yes. And for those of you who did not hear David Friedman the first time, if you go to the Love Letters Live website, which is loveletterslive.com, and you put David into the search box, it will take you to David's other presentations and conversations, and to listen to him talk about how we went from being, we can just kind of start there and do it briefly, so shy and so terrified of being out, right? I think you had said that your first, when you knew you were better, you walked across the first floor of Macy's?
Oh, yes. Well, I had what they would call panic disorder. Mm-hmm. I still have panic disorder. Mm-hmm. It's not something you ever get rid of. Mm-hmm. And I was hospitalized for it when I was 20. I couldn't, mm-hmm. the floor would shake and spin and my heart would pound and I couldn't breathe and stuff when I would walk outside. And one day I said to myself, I'm so angry because if I get up and walk across the floor, the room's going to spin. And then I said, well, do you want to walk across the floor? Mm-hmm. Okay. Then the room's going to spin. And I walked across the floor and the room spun and I felt anxious, but I walked across the floor.
And now you are a conductor on Broadway.
I've conducted many shows on Broadway.
Yes.
And
you're a composer?
Planes. I'm a composer. Uh-huh. I sit in tight spots. And what it is, and I have a whole life's work that's come out of it called Thought Exchange, which is about the experiencing your sensations. We think that life is about getting comfortable and not feeling stuff, but
getting over something.
Getting over something. Uh-huh. That would be, as I say, if your sensations are your history and what I call your inner child, then what you are doing when you're trying to get over it is a child has come up to you and said, I'm very upset, and you're saying to the child, cancel, go away, I can't stand you, and you have to disappear. So what I work on is talking to myself and saying, okay, I feel this, I'm with this. And what it does is it not only allows you to do anything because it doesn't, you know, like for instance, when you perform, your heart's pounding, doesn't mean you can't perform, but it also allows you to heal your past because there's a child in there who is getting heard mm-hmm. for the first time and felt for the first time. And what you're getting is the reality that is. It's sort of like if you're in a relationship and you have to not show certain parts of you mm-hmm. Because they won't be accepted, you're not in a relationship. And so my life, through performing, see what's interesting is when most people who go for ambition and try to get somewhere think that they're doing it so that they will get away from the inner child. In other words, I will be so successful.
Well, the inner child who's screaming at you something it shouldn't be.
That's right, exactly. Uh-huh. I will be so successful that I will never feel this anxiety, that I will never feel this panic, that I will never feel this. The fact is that the more we move toward, this is what my thought exchange work is about, okay. which makes it so different. Because most people are saying, you know, get positive, do this, and then it'll be wonderful. As we move toward that success, we start feeling the inner child more. Because if the inner child was hurt by... See, people think that positive thoughts make you feel good and negative thoughts make you not feel good. It's actually the opposite.
Good for you.
When you are holding... When you're trying to hold a positive thought and you can't seem to hold it, it's because somewhere earlier on, that positive thought became associated with pain. You said, I'm going to go out there and do this, and then someone slapped you down or whatever. And so every time you say, I'm going to go out there and do this, a part of your body...
Or somebody said you can't or you shouldn't.
Right. Or you got hurt. Or, you know, for instance, I do a thing with my classes where I say, I want everyone in the room to take on the thought, I am beyond a doubt the most beautiful person in this room. And people immediately start to laugh, and then they go, no, I'm not. It's terrible. And when I say, it's a thought. What made you not able to have that thought even? It's because they felt a tightness in their chest or they feel like they're choking or whatever.
Well, so you're saying pay attention to the physical symptoms or the
physical sensations
are
the thing that we... But the point is, you're on the right road. You see, because if you were a young child and you said, someone said, oh, you're so beautiful, and then molested you, then Ooh. The thought of you are so beautiful would terrify you.
Right.
If you got hit, or if you said, I'm so beautiful, and someone said, go to your room, how dare you do this, and stuff like that. So what happens is the inner child comes up, and then the only thing the inner child can do to get away from those sensations is take on a thought that won't produce them.
Do you know, when you mention that, if you are so beautiful and you are molested, I've been aware that a great many people, well, women will sometimes, girls will go out of their way to make themselves unattractive.
That's right.
They're obese or they're anorectic.
That's right.
Or, yes.
And then someone will say to them, now, you're so heavy. Think positive. Go on a diet, and then you'll feel. But they feel worse and worse as they go on a diet. Because if they put on the weight, I just lost 50 pounds. And as I came down to certain weights, I would bounce off them. I was unable to stay at them because that was the weight at which I had suppressed something by gaining weight.
Uh-huh.
So if you want to be thin, you have to be with all your history. So you don't feel better when you start to have the success. Now, that would seem like I would say with my workshops, I say, come to my workshop, pay me money, nothing will happen, and you'll feel worse when you leave. But what happens is, the point is this, and this is what's very hard for us to get. Our lives are only experienced inside of us in the invisible world of experience. So we were talking the other day about Robin Williams. You know, I knew Robin Williams. I did Aladdin with Robin. And Robin had a great sadness and depression about him. The fact that he was a brilliant star
right.
had nothing to do with his interior experience. If you looked at the life of Robin Williams, the experience was highs and lows and stuff like that, but mm-hmm. a great depression, a mm-hmm. great sadness, a great that is not touched by that. So our lives are only lived on the inside. So the point is, all our great careers and our ambitions and our successes, we think that we're working with the inside so that we can have those real successes. In fact, the successes and the life outside are nothing. They are vehicles for working with the inside, for coming to reclaim that inner child. So we go for these things knowing it doesn't matter if we get them or not.
Do you work with people on defining what real success means?
Well,
and how do you approach that?
What I really do is when someone says they want something or they're going for something, I go right for the experience. You see, I just go right for what's going on in you. And so what happens is success, it's sort of backwards because most people it takes a while for them to get there. I say success comes with this sensation. So like when I go into a corporation, I'll say, what are your problems in your company? And they'll list them. And then I'll say, since it's only going on in you, you know, you're seeing a problem, what thought of yours is that reflecting to you? And they'll say something like that, I'm not allowed to have money, or I can't be successful, or mm-hmm. whatever. So then I say, what thought would you like to have? And they'll say, I can meet my quota. Mm-hmm. I'll say, have that thought, notice your body. And they'll notice that they get a splitting headache when they think I can meet that quota. So we make a bookmark that says, I can meet that quota comes with a splitting headache.
Because of the failure of the past?
Because when they took on a thought like that in the past, something happened that was mm-hmm. dangerous. Mm-hmm. And so they are going to, I never call it a negative thought. I call it a protective thought.
Uh-huh.
We're taking on the thought, I can't do this, because to think I can do this to the inner child gets you in danger.
Yeah.
So our whole life, if you can hold any thought you want, and you will see the world that way because the world is only your thoughts, if you're willing to experience the sensations that come with that thought.
So hence the thought exchange.
That's right. But that means two things now. You exchange your thought for something else, but you have to be willing to experience your sensations. Also, you're having an exchange of thoughts with your inner child. You are noticing your inner child thinks this. You're not saying, no, don't think that. The inner child has every right to think that.
Mm-hmm.
I remember this is a wonderful story. Lucy Arnaz is a great friend of ours. You know, she's a wonderful singing and stage
yes.
star. And I was getting a Lifetime Achievement Award,
mm-hmm.
and she was presenting it to me. So we're both backstage pacing the floor nervously. She has to go out and expound on my virtues for 5 minutes, and then I have to go out and sing and talk. So she says to me, all right, thought exchange, what are my sensations? And she said, my throat is tight, mm-hmm. my stomach is churning, and my hands are shaking. And just as she said that, the announcer said, ladies and gentlemen, won't you welcome the one, the only, the incredible Miss Lucy Arnaz. And she looked at me and she pointed to her throat, she pointed to her stomach, she pointed to her hands, and she said, I can go out there with that. Uh-huh. And she walked out. And now someone who decides that they have to not be nervous in order to go on the stage will never get to the stage. Mm-hmm. And so people say, do I have to feel this way all my life? And I say, perhaps. But for instance, when my inner child, which my panic disorder is my inner child, it's actually a complete panic attack for me. It's a little buzzing in my neck, a funny feeling in my hands, and a kind of fluttering of my heart. But then my mind goes, oh, that means I'm going to die. That means I'm going to this and that. And so my panic is there. My relationship to it is different. I now go, I walk down the street and I'll say, oh, when we sell this apartment, it'll be great because then I'll be able to really have the time to do what I want. Mm-hmm. And I hear a big loud voice say, oh, when you sell the apartment, all the things you want to do are going to fall away. And I was walking through an airport thinking that, and I stopped and I said, who said that? And it was some part of me to whom something like that had happened. Mm-hmm. And I go, of course you feel that way. Not be positive, don't be silly, because then if you had a child who was upset and was screaming and you weren't paying attention to it, it would start screaming more. Mm-hmm. It would grab your leg. It would. Mm-hmm. So it's being with this stuff that allows us freedom. And it's the sensations we have. Terror becomes excitement. Fear becomes, I'm anxious to do this. It's just...
Oh, in the positive way.
Yeah, it's just a sensation.
I have a question about that kind of terror you're talking about, which is before you go out onto a stage.
Right.
And it's always occurred to me, on the positive side of that, that stage fright is kind of and this could be just so wrong, but that an indication or a sense of seriousness of the responsibility that you have taken on, mm-hmm, going onto that stage.
I call it all systems go. It's your adrenals shooting so that you can do what you have to do.
I've heard no stage fright, no good show.
Yeah, but like rockets firing, uh-huh, so that you can do the things you want to do.
Because that is a huge responsibility, going out in front of a stage where you've got...
Now it is a huge responsibility, and it doesn't matter. Because, uh-huh, I'll tell you what happens. I teach workshops where you have 20 people, say, from Unity, who you could pass out on the stage.
Wait, let's just define Unity is the church.
Unity is a church,
yes,
that I belong,
yes,
to, and my partner,
yes,
Sean Moninger,
yes,
is a minister at it. And you have 20 people who, there's nothing you could do wrong. And the person standing up is still saying, oh my God, if I do this, I'll be so embarrassed and humiliated, and everyone will hate me. And because we have the thought about that. You know, I remember Beverly Sills saying, well, you learn your part, you go out there, and it should go well. And if it doesn't go well, uh-huh, there's 2,000 human beings out there. This, mm-hmm, is just what happened. We make up all this stuff because a sensation has an association. So
yes,
my favorite thing is people say, often when you ask people, you know, in America especially, we are very out of tune with our sensations. We don't even know what we're experiencing.
Right.
You ask someone what sensation you're having, and they will tell you what they're thinking. Mm-hmm. So I'll say, what sensation are you having? And they'll say, I feel like my head is going to explode. Mm-hmm. And I've said to people, I said, you know what? I've been doing this workshop for years, and only 3 or 4 heads have exploded. You know?
It doesn't really happen. Chances of living.
Yes, exactly.
So do you get to a point where you go from that, you know, my throat is closing and my head, and I'm going to die if I go out there. And at some point you say, my throat is closing and I'm not going to die?
Well,
that's not even relevant.
There's a sort of famous story in my life when I did my first performance on Broadway as a conductor. I was standing on the podium ready to go on for the very first time. And there was a stage manager, Charlie Blackwell, and he was probably in his 60s at the time and a very renowned stage manager. And he walked up to me and he said, well, David, this is your first Broadway show, mm-hmm, and this is my 50th Broadway show.
Mm-hmm.
And the difference between us is you feel like you're going to die, mm-hmm, and you think you really will. And, mm-hmm, I feel like I'm going to die, and I know I won't.
So
I used to put a sign on my music stand saying, so die, when I conduct it.
Okay, so the question that I have been asked sometimes about you,
uh-huh,
is how did you go from being afraid to walk across the first floor at Macy's,
uh-huh,
to be able to step out into the orchestra pit in front of, what, 3,000 people?
Yeah, 1,000 at least, yes.
And
I just kept wanting to do things and kept going, okay, fine, this is the way David Friedman feels.
Do you go out there and realize that everyone is on your side?
No, I don't realize anything. I realize, uh-huh, I'm going out there to do something. I think I'm going
to
die. It doesn't matter. It has nothing to do.
Yes, I
think I'm going to die just because I will. No logic does this. It's not an explanation. It's reclaiming an experience that, mm-hmm, you have. Just noticing, this is the way it feels. Like we were at a retreat last week and somebody got up and sang with a confidence I had never before seen him have. Okay, and we'd been working on this. Mm-hmm. And I said, you had a confidence you never before had. He said, I know. I said, how did it feel to do that? He said, oh, horrible inside.
Oh,
and
my goodness.
He was willing to feel that. Uh-huh. But then we don't define it as horrible. We define it as the way it feels.
But this is so important. This is just brilliant. Willing to feel that instead of stifling it.
That's right.
And thinking that you have to get rid of it before you can continue.
Which you can't.
Willing to feel
take
that.
Take the marathon.
Great.
People run the marathon. It has nothing to do with a physical act. It has to do with that you have the thought that you can do this. And at mile 20, you hurt and you can't breathe and your legs are tired and you're gasping and you're hungry and you're thirsty. Mm-hmm. If you can't tolerate those sensations, there's an easy way to stop them. Mm-hmm. Just exchange the thought, I can run the marathon, for I can't run the marathon, and you will stop and feel more comfortable. Mm-hmm. But you won't, not only will you not have run the marathon, but you will not have
altered anything.
Experienced something in yourself that used to stop you and doesn't stop you. And now you say, oh, well, I'm going to make this phone call, but, oh, I'm so terrified. And then you feel the terror.
This is kind of the damn torpedoes full speed ahead.
Yes, exactly.
Philosophy and action.
Yes, but actually bring on the torpedoes.
Talk about you in another aspect for a minute, and then I know you want to talk about Lamont, right?
Yes, yes.
So just kind of, okay, your website first. That would be best. Let's give your website, because the world in which you are involved creatively is just, it goes on and on and on. One thing leads to another. I don't know how you have time to do it all.
I don't either.
Yes, right. And yet to have a dinner date and be social and have
I'm being much better about that.
Oh, good.
I'm starting to realize the center of my life is not getting somewhere. It's being somewhere.
Oh, good.
And, okay, somebody on the on Facebook today said, if you could describe these times in one word, what would it be? And people said horrible, evil, whatever. And Sean and I looked at each other and we both said, now.
Oh, yes.
That's all it is.
Yeah, see, that's such a light in this world.
Yeah, it's just that's what it is. Yeah. My website, I have two of them.
We're going to spell them also because, you know.
TheThoughtExchange.com. TheThoughtExchange.com.
Okay.
That's my thought exchange work. I have a book out called The Thought Exchange. I have another book coming out called The Healing Power of Negative Thoughts and Uncomfortable Sensations.
Oh, wonderful. And, you know, in light of Robin Williams' tragic death, there is a lot of awareness about bringing the darkness into the light.
That's right.
Stifling. So
that's
this is so relevant always, but people are more receptive now, I think. So what's that website?
That would be thethoughtexchange.com. It's not out yet. I just handed it in. But the subtitle of that is Stop Being Afraid of Your Negative Thoughts and Uncomfortable Sensations and Start Using Them to Heal.
How do you use them?
You use them by feeling them, and that brings you in touch with your inner
child.
So
what we were just talking about.
Uh-huh. And you just are there with them, and then you can do anything you want.
What about music?
Music is Midder, MIDDER. Music, MUSIC.com.
Okay.
And that's all my
songs. Talk about the extent of your musical life for just a minute. I mean, it's hours to do, but can you do it in a couple of minutes?
Well, I started on Broadway. I conducted 6 Broadway shows. Then I went to Hollywood and conducted movies and vocal arranged Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, Pocahontas, Hunchback of Notre Dame. Then I realized what I really wanted to do was write, so I stopped doing those because I worked with Alan Menken, who was fantastic and a great inspiration to me, but I wanted to do it myself. And so now I have 5 shows that are on their way to Broadway or off Broadway, and I produced a wonderful singer named Nancy Lamott in the middle of that.
Now, this was some time ago, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Now I'm working on is getting my shows out there, my musicals out there. That's really what I'm focusing on this year. And so
what is it you want to do with Nancy Lamott now?
Well, Nancy Lamott was an amazing, amazing cabaret singer who got her career start in San Francisco. She was from Midland, Michigan. She's very beloved in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't say I discovered her, but I walked up to her and said, you should be recording in 1990. And she said, yeah, but who's going to do it? And I said, I will. And I created a record company for her. And many of my most well-known songs, Help Is On The Way, We Can Be Kind, We Live On Borrowed Time, I'll Be Here With You. These were introduced by Nancy. And so Nancy died in 1995.
You know, I forgot that she died because some people seem like they never have.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. She died almost 20 years ago. And in fact, her cat Mercer, who we had for 19 years, just died. And this has brought all this up for me. I mean, and so Nancy died just as she was about to explode onto the international scene. I mean, she just was really, and she was 43 when she died. And so, I made a commitment to her on her deathbed to keep her music and her memory alive. And I've done that by putting out numerous albums and selling them. And so what we're doing is, there's a wonderful, wonderful lyricist named David Zippel who wrote City of Angels, and he wrote all sorts of movies for Disney and other Broadway shows, The Goodbye Girl. And David and Nancy were close friends. And Nancy did a lot of demo work for him and Marvin Hamlisch. When they would do a new show, she would be the one to go in and record the songs. And we have all of these. Mm-hmm. And
but they're not out.
They're not out. No. And so we're going to do a CD. It's going to be the first CD in a set called Nancy Lamott Collector's Items, of really interesting things. And what I decided to do is do it as an Indiegogo crowdfunding campaign, so that her fans will get to contribute and be part of it.
That's a lovely thing.
And also it allows me to raise enough money to really, you know, because I'm not really a record company person, so I don't really have the clout or the time or whatever to really promote this. So it'll allow us to promote it properly and get the music to her hundreds of thousands of fans. And so starting on September 4th, we're doing an Indiegogo campaign. And it's...
So how can people...
The interesting thing is it will go out on the internet. Perhaps I will send you a link when it becomes time to, because we don't have the link yet because the campaign is being made. But we already, I just sent out the preliminary letters and people are really responding in droves. And but being in San Francisco, it just, my heart sort of really remembers her and feels her and so many people here. And so I'm hoping that San Francisco will really partake. I'm really trying to get to... Through the help, I'm here doing the Help Is on the Way benefit right now, actually, which Nancy sang the first one. Mm-hmm. I'm singing the songs that she sang 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And we're really trying to reach the San Francisco community because there's so many people. I get so many letters of people who remember her fondly. And so it'll be one of those things where we're sending out thousands of emails and hopefully people will email other people with those emails.
Sure.
And you can just, there'll be a link and you go online, you see a movie of me describing what it is, and then you can contribute and get all sorts of perks.
And these records will be sold online?
They'll be sold all over the country. But in other words, if you contribute $20 to the campaign, you get a free record. If you contribute $5,000 to the campaign, you get to be listed as an associate producer. Mm-hmm. If you contribute $10,000 to the campaign, David Zippel and I will write you a personal song. Mm-hmm. You know, they're all different sorts of levels so that people can do whatever feels right. And there are people who are very committed to her. And so I'm just very excited to spread the word about that. And
it's odd how people who have actually died don't seem like they... I mean, as long as they're alive in your head and their voice, and they're somehow still here.
Well, again, you see, what I always say is, since our life only goes on in our experience, I'm sitting opposite you, I think. I cannot prove that you're sitting there. If I were dreaming, you'd be sitting there. But I do have the experience of you sitting there. You know, a lot of people in the philosophy of, you know, there's nobody out there, there's only you.
They say,
that's so lonely. And I go, it's not lonely. You're not out there. You're inside of me. You are right
than lonely.
That's right. Yes. That's right. It's we are, or everybody and everything is one thing that's inside me. Mm-hmm. And so with someone like Nancy, she definitely is very much alive.
In fact,
in my letter,
I have people like that in my personal life who have died, and I don't feel that.
No, you know,
you must also.
And you talk to them, and you experience them, and who knows? You know, because again, the level on which we're relating is actually non-physical, and so it turns the whole world upside down. It's that we're dealing with our thoughts, we're dealing with our sensations, we're dealing with who we are internally, and that's all we're dealing with.
So I want to make a switch because this is when I do it, and I say, who gets your love letter today? Because there is always, and of course, I've got a thought, but I don't want to thought exchange it with you because I want to know what you would do. If you had to write a letter right now, who would it be to?
Right now, if I had
to write... Because we don't want to take that gratitude to the grave.
You know, it's funny. I don't know specifically to whom it is, but I have been experiencing this year a tremendous amount of challenge and resistance. And as I go through it, I realize out of the corner of my eye that it's like the mirror is trying to show me something about myself, that as I'm really going for certain things I want and people seem to be blocking me and stopping me, what they're really doing is saying you're going for what you want, but you have the thought that you can't have it, mm-hmm. or you're afraid of your sensations, or what you want has to do with something inside you. I want to write a thank you letter to everyone who is blocking my way and showing me painful things and saying no. And because I'm aware that those are the places.
Okay, so I have a thought.
Yeah.
Because just for me personally, when I think of a love letter as something that's mailed and opened on some other end and received,
uh-huh.
the reality of you're being able, well, maybe you can. Maybe you can write a love letter to each of those people.
Yeah.
But what if you wrote one to yourself and phrased it in terms of, I see what people are doing and how really pleased with yourself you are. In other words, giving yourself excuse me, a good pat on the back.
Actually,
what you're able to do with all that.
You actually gave me an idea, which I think I'd rather do.
What?
I'm going to write a love letter to my inner child.
Okay.
Saying, I love you exactly as you are. I see you exactly as you are. Everything that I used to call disturbing about you, I get.
Now, will you specify those things? Because a good love letter has specifics.
Yes. Well, that you get anxious when I do things I want to do, and I'm aware that what you're showing me is what happened to me and where those thoughts are sitting in me. So I want to thank you for being the keeper of all those thoughts.
I hope you will include some specifics. And because you have a significant place in music, life, and history, because that's, you know, tomorrow's hello to today is history, mm-hmm. if you write that and send it to yourself. Stamp it and mail it. First of all, if you read it, you're going to see that it's a different you who wrote it than is reading it.
Yes, yes, always, yeah.
And stick it someplace in wherever you keep your treasures. And somebody will find this in 50 years, and they'll get a much fuller picture of the man who has done all. I mean, wouldn't you love to have one of these from, you know,
yes.
Philip Arlen or anybody, Cole Porter?
To see who... Well, also, yes, to see who you are and also to see how the person you are is not the person who you look like you are to other people.
That and yeah. whatever, all that should go in your letter.
Yeah.
That's private business,
yeah.
and why not? But I have another thought. A letter to Nancy Lamott. And I don't know, even as part of the liner notes or somehow in the record or mm-hmm. maybe not, but a love letter to her because she's been huge for you and the way you smile when you talk about mm-hmm. her.
It's funny, I found among my things a love letter from her to me where she said, David, I don't know if I say this, but you know, you have been the angel in my life. And
it's
framed.
And have you written one to her?
No.
Dear Nancy, I'm sorry this took me so long to answer your letter, but here I am.
I did, though, write to John Edward, you know, the famous psychic, and I said, I'm doing this campaign, and if you happen to be speaking to Nancy, if there's anything she needs to tell me, would you please let me know?
Wonderful.
But that's a great idea, because I do think that writing things down and journaling and things like that are tremendously
powerful. It's wonderful, but mailing it and finding it as an actual letter, it's a whole different physical activity.
Yeah.
And I don't know, somehow even inside the album, if you ever wanted to do that, or just...
That might be too personal to me as far as the public.
That's what I'm saying.
To send myself a love letter, to send Nancy a love letter, and to send...
And address it to yourself.
Yeah.
Because
care of David
you can tell her that you're keeping it for when you see your next, because you don't have her present address.
Yes, right, exactly.
So much to do.
Yeah.
Thank you for doing this with me.
I love doing this with you.
Great.
I always am overjoyed to do this. It just goes by. It seems like it's 5 seconds.
I know. It's not long enough.
Yeah,
and I know you have somewhere to say, so because you always do. So
yes.
Next time you're here, mm-hmm. please come back.
I will.
Talk about other things. So I want to remind you all, as you can see all the time, that if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, not only writing a love letter is a special occasion, but if you just keep your eyes and your heart open, you will see all the opportunities that you have with every experience to write that love letter to someone.
Yes.
So from me to you, for right now, Janet Gallen saying goodbye.